Accession number 28804, Reel 2.
Fortunately, it aborted. And although they had hoped that they could do it again later on that year, their Luftwaffe.
The Luftwaffe, yeah.
Can you change that? Their Luftwaffe was not as good as ours, and so they could not do what they had thought they would do, and instead grounded for the time being.
Right.
Germany then decided instead to set its sights towards the east, Russia, where a large part of its military and manual resources was involved for a very long time and was finally defeated. Stop.
This is Barbara Hammond, Reel 2. Now,
it was early that morning that I went ahead with an advance party to our next accommodation on the borders of Sussex and Kent. A disused tea room and pleasure garden, complete with several empty monkey cages, one of which we rigged up as an office for the CO. We were able to carpet the floor from bits and pieces lying around, and even managed a vase of flowers on her desk when she arrived. We slept in a part of the building on the floor on palliasses filled with straw, very prickly, and especially so as I still favoured rather décolleté nightwear.
How big were the monkey cages? It's a very
like
striking
this.
Image.
Not quite as big as this.
So it's like a sort of small bedroom size.
Oh, hardly that. There were about three or four of them.
And how did the CO take to that?
She thought it was brilliant. She thought it was absolutely brilliant. She thought there was such resourcefulness. I mean, to even have a carpet, it looked like homes and gardens.
So it had a roof on it, obviously.
Oh, yes.
Did it have any
and then some
walls or anything? Or?
Well, I think it had two walls and then the...
Just the cage at the front. Very tempting to lock her in at some point.
She was a wonderful CO. I'd like to say something about her.
Please, feel free.
I'm not talking about all this at the moment, am I?
Yes, if you want to say something about her now.
Yes, yes. That particular CO was called Stella Dixon. She was a wonderful woman, and we all adored her. She had been with the Fannies in the First World War in Belgium. And one day, the word came around that there was a big
So a word had just come that there was a lorry, you said?
A lorry. In full of ammunition and explosives parked in a building together with ambulances, etc. And the whole thing was alight. Stella Dixon rushed in to that building, got herself into the cab of the lorry and drove it out before it was alight.
Before it exploded?
Yeah, before it was.
It did explode, didn't it?
No, it didn't. Before it exploded. For that, she got the military medal. Now, I think it was. She drove something out anyway. So I don't think she couldn't have driven all the ambulances out, could she?
Gosh.
She drove that out. So it stopped them exploding.
That's quite a commanding officer to have.
Yeah. We all loved her. Mm. So that was her.
But then you didn't stay at the tea rooms for very long, did you? You were moved on again.
We only stayed there for a short while until moving to a farm near Edenbridge. That's in Kent. During the harvest. And when off duty, helped in the fields. That first summer was particularly hot, and so were our khaki uniforms, and we welcomed the tea and homemade cakes and scones provided after our labours.
So you were digging in the fields and things like this?
We were.
So, hang on.
Yes, we were forking the hay.
So they kept you busy?
Very busy.
Did you have any free time then, or were you
literally just working? Oh yes, we had. We were. And we often used to go into East Grinstead. And we used to go to a certain bar near the hospital there.
Nearby?
Near the local hospital, I think it was. Full stop. That particular hospital was for patients, or rather I should say
casualties.
Yes. Both RAF and Army, and I don't know about the Navy, but definitely the RAF and Army. And of course there the famous Dr. Gillies made his name for the wonderful plastic surgery he performed. I saw several of his patients after they had had their new facial identity, and they were all so wonderfully brave about their recent
trauma.
Especially as so many of them had already had to endure such frightful accidents, both in the air and on the ground. Yes. In early September, we went up to Woolwich, near to the barracks, but again, we were in requisitioned private property nearby. The battle for the skies was at its height, and London was being bombed persistently. Late one night, two of us were in our ambulance while the air raid was raging. The whole of the city seemed on fire from the blast of bombs and incendiaries, and one could easily read a newspaper from the glare alone.
So it was very bright.
Very bright.
Was there any sort of smell or taste that went with that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And heat. And the noise all around, and help from everybody who was able to provide it, including the emergency services coming to the aid of casualties from the bombing.
One thing I wanted to ask about that before you moved on, though, was it very sort of a dusty atmosphere, or how was it besides the heat and the glare? Was there anything else that you remember about it?
Oh, yes. A haze from the fires. It was incredible, really. It was absolutely incredible. And the civilians, they were so, so marvellous. Those who had survived for the time being, anyway. But everyone that... Sorry. Everywhere there was that wonderful British stoicism. And that uplifting Cockney humour. We were very near the Old Kent Road in my billet, and often I would drive that way the morning after a raid and marvel at the spirit of those who were already sweeping away the debris of the night before and giving comfort to neighbours whose houses and homes had been obliterated by the previous horrors. By 11 a.m. every day, queues of school children and others clutched their satchels or bags, awaiting their entry to the nearest tube station, and where most of them lived day and night until the worst of the bombing was over. It was dreadful. Those youngsters, they looked so pale and black-eyed, and so many of them were already without their pals and their mates, because so many had been left away from London to go down to Cornwall or Devon, or even over to Africa, some of them, South Africa, or elsewhere, sometimes America, because their parents thought they would be much safer away from England at that time. So it was always a very sad to look at them all, just waiting and queuing and wondering what the next day was going to hold.
And during this time, were you mostly on duty at night, or did you have to work nights and days as well?
It varied. I didn't do an awful lot myself, because by that time, I think I must have been a sergeant by that time, and I was doing an awful lot of the administration in the company office.
And what sort of thing would that involve, administration?
Oh, well, things to do with the running of the unit, doing an awful lot with the my colleagues, accountancy, doing a lot with the CO, and also, of course, very much in charge of the actual by the other ATS involved, because by that time, of course, we had because during the spring that had just passed, we Fannies were given notice from the War Office that it was no longer viable for them to pay for two women's services, i.e. the ATS and the Fannies, and that they were to be amalgamated, the ATS being much the larger of the two. My pay was then 8 shillings and 3 pence a week. We Fannies were given time to make our decision. We could either re-enroll with the Auxiliary Territorial Service or resign and join the Free Fannies without pay and providing our own staff cars. Out of a very large company indeed, only two left and returned to the latter. So we were finally re-enrolled and became a part of the ATS, but were allowed thereafter to exhibit Fanny flashes on the left sleeve of our uniforms.
Now, just while you mention uniforms, and before I forget, were you issued with new uniforms, or did you again have your own uniform made?
We were issued with new uniforms, but a lot of us couldn't bear them, so...
Was that because they didn't fit properly, or...?
Yes. So we had them made privately and felt much better.
Now, I've got a couple of questions to ask you about just general training, actually, because I haven't asked you yet. Did you have to do things like the lads were doing, like fitness training?
We had a certain amount of PT we had to do, oh yes. It was drill. We had a lot of drill. and that was where I came onto my own. For some unknown reason, I was a very good driller. And because of that, when I eventually went to Octu, and at the passing out parade in Windsor, five members, or was it six? Six members of the 400 cadets that had been passed were asked to be for that parade alone, comma, for different official units. Not units.
Right. I mean, we can come back to this when we talk about Octu if you want. So if I just finish
just
asking you about,
yes,
about
official,
general training.
Official
bit.
Units.
Oh. And then we'll come back and talk about that, because your passing out parade was quite something. So I don't want
to... You haven't put that in then?
Not yet. I want to do a section on that later, so I don't want to miss anything.
Stopped?
Well, we're just talking about just general fitness training, and you turned out to be quite good at drill.
Yes.
Why? Did you like it? Or?
Yes, I loved it. And I was very good, apparently.
So that was mostly what you did for fitness training. You didn't do cross-country running or boxing
or anything
like that. I certainly
didn't. I wasn't a runner. I certainly didn't.
But how did you feel about taking orders as well?
Oh, that was easy.
So you didn't mind that at all?
No, because I usually had to give them.
Oh, right. That's the easy way out. And the training that you were doing, did you have any sort of defensive training about how to deal, for example, with air raids or gas attacks or anything?
Only the usual, you know, gas mask drill, telling the people that were under me what they'd got to do in an emergency. Because, of course, we had, what would they call it? And, of course, car maintenance was a good thing. It was a great feature.
So rather than weapons training, you were having things like vehicle maintenance training?
As well as the usual first aid for bomb casualties, etc. And which we had to obviously see that our subordinates were involved in.
And you talked about promotion. We just sort of skirted around promotion. But by this stage, and this is before 1942, you'd already gone through the stages of being a sergeant, and you were a company sergeant major?
No, that was the year later.
Right. And who were you company sergeant major with? Which company was it?
By that time, the 58th Motor Company.
And how did promotions actually come about? Did you have to apply for them, or were you selected?
Selected.
So basically you just get the letter, or you get the called into the office one day and said?
Yes, just selected.
And then did you have to sort of upgrade at all your uniforms? Or
oh yes, you had to put new stripes on. And of course when I became Company Sergeant Major, I had to put what they called a poached egg. They called it the poached egg emblem on your left hand cuff.
Obviously, you were having to do this yourself at that stage.
Oh, yes.
But then we get to your officer training, because that was 1942? When you went
the
up to Scotland?
The end of 1942.
And that's when you went up to Scotland, is that right? The first.
I went up to Dalkeith. That was near Edinburgh for 1 month pre-Octu training. And as far as I remember, it was a gunnery unit.
And what sort of activities did they have at that stage? What were you doing?
Well, I was just really going around looking to see what they all did, the ATS and the privates and their officers. Just really...
It's like observation.
Observation, yes.
And so when you came down to...
Edinburgh.
Windsor, you came down to
yes.
That was Octu itself.
That was then I went straight down to Octu, and that was for 2 months.
And what were you doing there?
General duties. Learning how to be an officer.
So it was lectures, basically.
Lectures, mm-hmm. A lot of lectures, mm-hmm. A lot of electing, mm-hmm. A lot of participation in interviewing, accountancy, discipline, understanding.
And that was 2 months that you were doing that for?
Yes. And again, a lot of drilling.
Which you liked. And of course, brings us back to this famous occasion with the passing out parade.
The passing out parade, yes. I made many friends in Windsor at the Octo and enjoyed those 2 months so much. Windsor as a town was so alive and so steeped in heritage, and we were overlooked by the castle. At our passing out parade, 5 of us were given a special individual rank for the parade itself. Mine was the Regimental Sergeant Major, and it meant my involvement in the larger part of the proceedings. I was petrified and confided to another cadet, a Scot, whose close relatives owned a distillery in Scotland. It was the day itself, and she said the best thing would be for us to have a stiff noggin before the event. And so we dashed down to the nearest pub, had 2 sizeable whiskey and oranges each, and felt much better, or rather I did. I felt relieved after Queen Elizabeth, King Haakon of Norway, and his son, Prince Olaf, had inspected the cadets, 400 in all, in the grounds of the Imperial Services College, Windsor, and my job was nearly at an end. The next morning, as officers, we had a very uplifting service in St. George's Chapel, Windsor Castle. And in the afternoon, we all decided, 8 of us or so, to go up to carriages for afternoon tea. I hoped sincerely that I had enough money on me, 7 and 6 pence each, plus 6 pence for the powder room. What would it be now? £34. We departed the next day and went our separate ways. So hard, but we were at the height of hostilities, and there was still much to be achieved, and there would be new experiences, both good and bad, awaiting. I was offered my first one that morning, the morning I left Windsor. Would I like to take a confidential post with the ATS? I would be in sole charge of a special unit in a military hospital, and, because of its confidentiality, would be given 2 pips instead of 1 right away. I accepted and was seconded to the RAMC in a military hospital in Hertfordshire, and where I would live in their mess for the next 2 years. The post involved the pay and aftercare arrangements for VD and pregnant ATS. They came from various units in the UK.